Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He is Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass, and it's a Friday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. It's Super Friday, in fact. Super Friday.
Does that mean you're feeling it now? Like you're really into it now?
No. You know what I'm into, though, is this weather in Boulder, Colorado. I went walking before the show.
Okay.
It is beautiful. Sunny, 60 degrees, mountains in the backdrop. It is gorgeous. If I was Deion Sanders, I would never leave this place.
I mean,
never.
That sounds pretty – the 60 is spot on. The crazy thing is, and I don't know if Boulder's similar to Denver, but my buddy used to live in Denver, and I used to go visit him and his family, and it was like – one day it's like 65, sunny, beautiful, and the next day it's snowing like a mother. And you're like, how did that happen? It's like being so close to the mountains, it's just so unpredictable.
Yeah. It's going to be 40, the highest 40 tomorrow.
Yeah, see, there so you go.
I'm going to try to get out there early. We play at a weird time, though, so it's going to be an early morning or it's going to be no exercise.
Are the Buffs any good?
They beat UConn in the non-con.
Oh, wow. Oh, I watched that game. That was the preseason tournament. I mean, the early season tournament, right?
Yeah, they haven't won a Big 12 game, but they beat UConn in the non-con. So, yeah, I mean, they're capable.
All right.
They're capable of beating anybody. Anybody's capable of beating anybody in this league. Lots to get to today. Who said it? Play that silly game.
I'm sure we won last time
for atonement, too. We did. I'm sure Brian's going to, like, stack the deck. He's going to have, like, five Dells or something like that.
He's like a mad scientist. He's already cackling back there and walking around like
Yeah, he already thinks he's going to win, yep. Which he probably will. I'm mailing it in. I'm looking at the mountains. Might stop by one of those stores in Colorado that they don't have in Texas. The NFL honors, I think, got two things wrong yesterday. We'll talk about that. It's the Super Bowl, too. Super Bowl is Sunday, so we'll talk about the Super Bowl as well. But another fourth quarter in Minnesota, and again, the Houston Rockets come up empty, losing streak up to a season-high 5, Blakers.
Yeah, look, I joked on the rundown, and I was going to say, hey, too bad the Rockets weren't more active before the deadline trying to get a closer, because, you know, from Billy Wagner to anybody else, I look at it and go, here we go again with the same
story. Turbo puns!
Like, they have such quality play for 3-plus quarters and just find a way all the time to just not finish the game in the fourth quarter. And granted, the biggest thing is like from the actual closer point of view, and again, let me be clear, I didn't want them to trade for a Jimmy Butler or an older aging superstar either. It's just that this is kind of why I'm adamant about keep the team together as is, see what you got, let them keep growing and get better, but they're not there yet because they don't have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who they've seen and who did this exact thing earlier in the season, or a Brunson, or an Edwards. Edwards was just silly last night. I mean, when he decided to flip the switch and go off in the fourth quarter, I think they could have done some things differently defensively just to try harder, but he's on a different level in terms of his ability and what he can do when he's on the floor, and they just didn't execute.
Yeah, there was one player in the fourth quarter yesterday that was doing great things, and the Rockets really didn't have that guy. No one was really making on the stretch for the Rockets, and it made it difficult for them to win the game. How much do you like that closer joke?
I don't care about it. I just thought about, like, you know, from the standpoint, we were worried about them trading for another player, you know, and trying, and some people had these grandiose Devin Bookers and Kevin Durant's and ideas like that, and I'm like, I didn't want to do any of that, but man, it would have been nice if they got a closer, someone that could finish a game every now and then. Because this is, and maybe Fred VanVleet, for as much as I'm good with him after this year, maybe Fred is that guy that at least he gives you the best chance to kind of make the right decisions, and come up clutch with shots, which he's done during the year, to be that guy kind of, you know, for the rest of the season.
I think you like the closer joke a lot.
I don't care if you think I like it or not. I just used it. I mean,
you put it in the rundown. You got to it in the first 2 minutes of the show. I think you liked that one.
Okay.
I think you liked it.
Okay, fine.
Grade the joke. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener.
Twitch line. Only.
I like it. What's okay. that?
Twitch only. That's where I'll get the positive
oh,
results.
Twitch. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all ready for it. Yeah.
Twitch is, you have to grade, whenever Twitchers grade you, it's on a curve.
No doubt.
Because those are like bottom of the barrel.
A fat guy in his underwear living in his mother's basement.
There you go. Yeah, but Anthony Edwards, star. Rockets don't really have that star. I think I'm to the point where just play through, and I'm with you. Like, I think we're probably underrating the value of Fred VanVleet on this team. I think we're seeing it. Like, somebody who can take care of the ball, get the offense going, getting them in what they need to be, not scared of taking the big shot, even though you may not want him taking the big shot, not scared of it. I do think that we are missing him. But I'm to the point, just go to Alpi Şengün. And look, Şengün has moments too. He turns the ball over at times, sloppy, takes some bad shots from time to time. But at this point, with as bad as they've been in the fourth quarter and with the lack of closer, just go to him. See if he can do it.
Yeah, look, I think you can do trial by fire and trial by air. And I think that there are guys. I think Jalen desperately wants to be that guy. And we saw that a little bit with the two games in New York. But he's not there yet because he turns the ball over with a pretty high rate when he's trying to be that guy. At least he did. And you know, I don't think he's an accurate enough shooter, consistent enough shooter in those moments. But, I mean, you have options, which we've talked about in the past. But none of those guys, whether it be Amen or whether it be Jalen or whether it be Alpi, I don't think those three young guys are polished in the way that they go about it. I mean, Anthony Edwards had a plan last night. And if you tried to kind of take away something from the plan and force him outside and you know, they were trying to double him and he would get it back, and instead of pulling up for the three after he made the two threes, then he put it on the floor and he went by guys and he split guys and he got to the line and he made free throws. They don't have that guy yet, but if you want to keep trying guys out, I think that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah, I think Alpi's your best chance. He's your most efficient offensive player. Don't love it, but I think it's your best route.
I'll tell you why I like it, Jeremy, simply because of the fact that he's at least willing to pass. Like, if you get it to him on the block or the elbow and he gets doubled or he feels the second guy coming at him, he will kick it to whoever's open and find the open man, where I don't know that Jalen always does that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that. Ime after the game on Anthony Edwards, it's nice to have a special player that can get buckets at the end. Is he talking to his team?
He's doing both. He's talking to his team, and he's kind of setting the table for the offseason, depending on how everything plays out the rest of this year, to kind of let everybody know, if we want to get to that next level, we may need to start searching harder to find a guy like that.
Who put Rockets should have acquired a closer at the deadline?
That's
right
me.
Here in this.
That's the me. That's you just mentioned it.
But you said that you didn't want him to.
No, but not a Jimmy, but not a big name. I was kidding. Like a closer, like a baseball pitcher, like, because they just can't close the game. Like, we just passed, you know, we were talking about major leaguers and free agency and all that. It was like they really need a closer that more like a Billy Wagner type than they do a Jimmy Butler or a Kevin Durant type, because this is the same broken record every night. And in this 5-game skid, we've seen it happen almost every game they've lost. They take a lead into the fourth quarter and then they trip all over themselves. And last night was the latest example. What did they score, like 16 points in the fourth quarter and just got dusted in the fourth after playing great for three quarters?
Yeah. I think Billy Wagner was a good athlete. I don't know how good of a basketball player he'd be. He's kind of short.
Short, stocky.
What is he?
Yeah.
The Granados say that he was like three bills or whatever. So he's probably not a great
There's no way Billy
player.
Wagner was
He's right-handed, bill. Too. He's right-handed. Learned to throw left-handed when he broke his arm in half. Did you notice Cam Whitmore get benched yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ryan Hollins, by the way, said it was Jock Landale's fault. Like, what are you watching, Ryan? Like, how could that be Jock Landale's fault? He's defending the big man who's setting the pick. And you can actually hear the coaches on the TV in the effects feed. They're saying over, which means what? Go over the screen. Go over the screen. He went under the screen twice. They hit a three. After he went under the screen twice, Ime Udoka takes a timeout. You don't see Ime Udoka for a little bit because he's off camera, but then you see him enter the camera and he's looking at Cam Whitmore, and you see Cam Whitmore chirp back, which was very, very interesting. Would have loved to see more of that. And then whenever they returned to play, guess who wasn't on the floor?
Mm-hmm. Cam Whitmore.
Cam Whitmore. Cam Whitmore got benched yesterday, and no one's talking about it. Now, he came back and played the second. He actually played well, which kind of goes to show you, hey, I like this Ime Udoka. He knows how to get the most out of Cam. If you're not going to listen to me on defense, you can come take a seat over here next to me for 5 minutes. I'm not going to allow that. And then when he comes back into the game, he's fired up and scored a bunch of points.
Well, and then, taking it a step further, late in the game, when we already knew, like, they were from behind, you know, they were behind, it looked like it was basically over, he was still cranking them up. He made one, so then you knew that the next time he touched the ball, he was taking another one. And it's like, the G League and all the things that the coaches are doing, it still hasn't changed him on the big picture side of things. He's still just hell-bent on, in order to be the, you know, he's got to be the man in order to feel like, you know, he fits in. And that's a tough deal.
Yeah, so just something that caught my eye. He did come back into the game, did play well. I like how Ime coaches him. Like, I don't think Steven Silas is doing that. And he would have ran right over Steven Silas and would never become the player that he's capable of being. But with Ime, I think he's got a chance. So that's actually something that encouraged me. Some positives from what has been a disastrous stretch here for the Houston Rockets. I think that Reed Sheppard's playing better. I know he didn't make the shot. I know he was 1-for-5. I know he hasn't found that rhythm. But he's playing with more comfort. He's playing with more confidence. You're seeing him grab the ball and run down the floor, find an open man. You're seeing him get to his shots. I think that Reed Sheppard's coming. Not that he's going to blow up and be a 20-per-game scorer or anything like that. But I think we're seeing glimpses of what the Rockets saw when they drafted him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, look, this is a lot like, maybe in a different standpoint, but when you bring up a young kid in baseball for the first time, you know that he might be the number one prospect in your farm system, but you also come in with the expectation that he's going to struggle a little bit early as he gets his feet wet and you know, figures out all he has to figure out. And I kind of equate the same thing to Reed Sheppard. I don't think they drafted him that high knowing that fundamentally he's sound. He has a ton of attributes that are going to translate to the NBA. He may even have another growth spurt and he's going to fill out. But it's going to take some time, and we're watching the evolution and the growth of Reed Sheppard, because the comfort is the first thing. You can go down to the G League and score 50, but what can you do to help your team on the NBA level? And last night, there's going to be nights in your NBA career where your shot's not falling. How else can you impact the game? I think we saw a little of that last night.
Yeah, he's starting to get there a little bit. I've been encouraged with what I've seen from Reed, and if he hits a couple of those shots, we're talking about, oh, okay. Like, sometimes whenever you make shots, it overrates your play. And when you miss shots, it underrates your play. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see good things from Reed Sheppard. I'm starting to have more hope again in Reed Sheppard, which is good. Because, I mean,
did you lose it?
You drafted him number 3. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't seen him do anything at the NBA level. That made me worried, yes.
Okay.
He got jumped in the rotation by Aaron Holiday. That's not great.
Well, but here's my thing, Jeremy. I wasn't expecting that much of him this year. I didn't expect him to be a rotational guy on a night-by-night basis his first year.
He started the year in the rotation. He started the year ahead
but
of
But I'm saying my own personal
Holiday.
Expectations. So that's why when I had people coming to me when he finally went down to the G League, why haven't they sent him down? Is he a bust? I'm like, he's so young, and he's still developing physically as well as understanding mentally. I would never even consider him and anything that happens this year leading to him being a bust. I think that he's going to be just fine. I just think that with his body type as it stands right now and his age, I didn't expect anything this year.
Yeah, I mean, he started the year in the rotation ahead of Cam Whitmore and Aaron Holiday, and has been jumped by those guys. Like, it's been a negative. It's been a negative rookie year. Not to say that, like, he doesn't have any potential, not to say that he's a bust, but certainly had moved in the wrong direction.
Yeah, no, look, I think that the expectation and the hope every time you draft a kid that high is that you're going to throw him in there, throw him to the fire. He's immediately going to get it all, take it all in, and start to excel and just go. And everybody's different, and you just kind of live and you learn as you experiment with those kind of situations. And, yeah, he wasn't ready when they first threw him in there, but hopefully through – you know, the practices and then getting that time in the G League and then being able to observe that he's, you know, kind of getting there to where we can see now more development between now and the end of the year.
Yeah, I think both things are true in this case, though. Like, growth is good, but he also was going from getting regular minutes to not playing at all. And now getting minutes again because you've had injuries. Like, what's it going to look like when Van Vliet's back, when Jabari's back? Is he the guy that's not getting the minutes? You know, Holiday didn't play yesterday, so it seems like he might have jumped him at least for the moment. But we'll see whenever they get to full health. Texter, Ime says before the game they like all their guys, did not want to make any moves, let them develop. And after the games, he says it would be nice to have a closer. He didn't say it in those words.
Mm-mm.
He said it's nice that they have a guy who can score. I mean, kind of a roundabout way, I guess. Maybe I'm being too critical here.
He's kind of a little Jeff Van Gundy-esque in that regard, though I don't believe that there's ever a time where he's not afraid to have a confrontational conversation with his players. But he does send messages through the media, because if you listened to some of his other comments in the postgame, like that comment that the texter mentioned, what he's really referring to is seeing if the guys that were on the floor, sending a message to see if they're capable of being a guy that can actually do the kind of things, maybe not Anthony Edwards-like, and also because he followed it up by saying, I mean, we had several guys that logged 15 to 20 minutes and couldn't get more than 3 rebounds while they were on the floor, and that's clearly a message to a lot of those young guys, and those comments have been pointed a lot towards Amen in the last couple of games, but it's like, if you're going to be on the floor for that long, I expect you to do more than just shoot up shots. And do that. You have to fill up the box score and do other things to help the team.
Texter says it would have been nice to have a closer. Could have had Fox. You had more assets than San Antonio. They messed up. See, I disagree with that. I think that trading for De'Aaron Fox would have helped you the rest of this season. But I still think you're capped out. And I think not trading for Fox, you're positioned to acquire a player that's eventually better than Fox. So I'm not really getting bent out of shape for not acquiring De'Aaron Fox.
The challenge is just finding the right fit for a guy that's capable of doing what they need to do. Because that's why I'm so totally out on Kevin Durant. At his age, no matter what he still has left in the tank, I just think it's the absolute wrong fit.
Well, the price matters, right? Like, if you get Kevin Durant for free, you're signing.
Price always matters. But I'm saying, because you're going to have to give up to get no matter what. But I just think that the De'Aaron Fox, at least he's a younger player, but I agree with you in the fact that I think that you could get a guy. De'Aaron Fox has ability. He can be really good. I don't know if he's a superstar. And so I think if they just play their cards right, play this out and keep doing what they're doing, they're going to have some financial flexibility down the road a little bit too. I think that at least there's time to find a guy that more kind of accurately fits the overall makeup of this team while still being that kind of guy.
Yeah, I just don't think that the guy's popped up yet. Like, they don't have a closer. We all know that. How do you acquire a closer? I'm not sure De'Aaron Fox is a closer. I wouldn't call De'Aaron Fox a closer. I thought the last time the Rockets played Sacramento, I thought De'Aaron Fox was their third best player. I thought Monk was better, and then obviously Sabonis was better. Maybe that's just very critical of a single game. But the last time the Kings played the Rockets, I thought he was the Kings' third best player. The way that the Rockets get a closer is either A, you develop that closer, which right now we're kind of sour on, but maybe we're being prisoners of the moment. But it's either Alpi, it's Jalen. You know, Amin maybe doesn't have enough of, like, scoring prowess to be that guy, especially from, like, shooting the basketball. Or you acquire one. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they've had the right guy out there to acquire yet. You're hopeful that that guy becomes available at some point. And to be frank, we have no idea who that guy is going to be.
No, I think you and I had a conversation about Devin Booker yesterday, and I said, look, he's a unbelievable shooter. I think that he can be a fluid scorer, but do I feel like he's a guy that can be that alpha one on a team that you just give the ball to, get out of the way, he puts it on the floor if he has to, and he creates? I don't feel like he's that guy, and I feel kind of similarly but in a different way to De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox can handle the ball. There's times that he can get to spots and make things happen. I don't think he's nearly the shooter Booker is. But again, I don't think he is the one on a team that has two or three superstar players trying to lead you to a championship. I think he's more suited to be like a two or a three. And I think Booker maybe a two or a three in terms of, I don't think they're the alpha dog one on a championship caliber team like an SGA or an Anthony Edwards or a Brunson. I agree with you. I think they're still looking, and I don't think anyone knows who that could be at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if I was power ranking the best chance, like Texter says, will Amin or Jalen ever turn into that? Spurs and some other – oh, he didn't say Spurs. He said SAS. I thought he was talking about Spurs, but he's talking about Stephen A. Smith. So Stephen A. Smith and some other media seem to think so. So will Amin or Jalen ever turn into that? Like, if you're power ranking the current Rockets in terms of the best chance to become a closer, I would actually have Alpi 1, Jalen, I guess, 2, probably Cam 3, and I just don't think Amin is a good enough offensive player to be that closer type. I think he can change the game throughout the game, but last minute, give me the ball, and I'm going to make sure my offense scores.
I think, see, to me, I think that Amin maybe can get there if he continues to, like, develop a shot, because he can put it on the floor, he's long, he can hang in the air, he can finish around the basket. But until he's able to, when teams pack the middle on him, like consistently make outside shots, and I know he's getting better at the mid-range, yeah, I don't have him as being that guy. Alpi can definitely be that guy. I think Jalen has all the tools to be that guy. I just don't think that from a basketball understanding and a maturity level that he's the, and I don't know if he's ever going to get there to be able to allow himself to understand. Sometimes that means I'm going to find the open guy after I get doubled or tripled or whatever it is. But I think that that order is probably right. Three, look, Cam, again, you know I'm a huge fan of Cam's game. But it's this kind of similar to Jalen in that you've got to understand that it's not just you against the world. And you have to understand how the game is played on this level as opposed to the levels you previously played.
See, I think they have very different demeanors, Jalen and Cam. I think Jalen's kind of soft, kind of passive. Like, I think there are moments where he's like, oh, I have to be the guy. So he, like, does it out of discomfort. Whereas Cam Whitmore, I think, is the exact opposite. I think Cam Whitmore is a give me the ball, everybody else get out of the way, and I'm going to jack up every single shot. I think Cam Whitmore is, like, overzealous. I think Jalen Green's naturally soft and passive.
My comparison is more or less the standpoint of understanding the NBA game, like, and what that means to have that responsibility. It's not just I'm shooting every shot with 3 minutes or less to play or when the game's on the line.
But don't you think Cam has that demeanor?
I think they both want to be that guy that does it, but I think they both think that that's how you're supposed to do it.
See, I think Jalen's way, way too comfortable being a secondary piece. I disagree with that. I don't think that Jalen Green's like, I'm going to be the man, and I'm just going to dominate the ball for the final 3 minutes. I think he's perfectly okay being the Robin.
I don't. I
can't.
In New York in particular, maybe, again, we talked about that because of, you know, the stage, the mecca of basketball, that stuff. Maybe he tried to do way too much. But in New York in particular, he looked like all of a sudden he got like blinders on and said, this is my time to shine.
I think Ime's challenging him. I think Ime's challenging him to step out of that passive Robin like demeanor to try to become that guy. I think it's Ime challenging him. I don't see – like I've watched Jalen Green for the last, you know, 3.5 years. I don't see a Jalen Green that's like this alpha male.
Yeah, I think that he believes he can make it. He can do that. I believe that he has that mentality. I think maybe he might be in a situation where when Fred is on the floor, when there are the veterans around him, especially Fred, but I think that maybe he doesn't try to do it as much. I did see it in New York where I was like, okay, like the turnovers, the not making it, the bad shot selections, the not taking, you know, not making the shots. I'm like, he wants to do that, but he can't do that.
He
yet.
Didn't do it last night, though. Like, he was – I thought he kind of faded into the backdrop last night when they could have used a guy. Like, he was keeping up with Anthony Edwards in the first half. They were, what, even at halftime or close to even? Didn't Jalen have 20 at the half?
He had a big first half.
Finishes with 8. I thought he got passive. And, like, the Knicks game would be the counterpoint. But, again, I think that's Ime challenge him. He only turned it over one time yesterday. Like, the ball's not even in his hands in the last couple of minutes. He's, like, chilling out, like, watching everybody else do their thing, Jalen.
I think both – it's kind of like a microcosm of how he's played since he's been a Rocket. I think that both things can be true. I think there are times.
No, I don't. I think you're either aggressive and like you have the alpha demeanor or you're not.
Well, I disagree because I think that there are times that he really wants to get – he gets selfish and he wants to do it all. And then there are also times where he just kind of fades, and maybe that's because he hasn't gotten enough touches or he kind of – he loses his somewhat of an interest because he's not the focal point when other guys got it going. But I think both can be true.
How could you be passive and aggressive?
I just told you. Like, if he's got it going or there, whatever suddenly tells him to flip the switch, there are times, like you just said, we saw it in New York, where he just decided, I'm going. I'm taking over. And he didn't do it, but he tried.
Right. I think he's very uncomfortable in that, though.
I think he certainly wants it. And I think that, you know, again, a lot of the younger guys feel like that's how you truly get paid and make a name for yourself, is that you become the man doing those kind of things. But I also think that sometimes, whether it's Ime or whether it's Fred or, you know, if he hasn't gotten enough touches going into that situation. There are times that he just flat out disappears. But like I said, there's also these stretches we've talked about since he's been a Rocket where he goes on a hot streak for five games, and then he sucks for five games. And it's part of why Jalen Green is such a mystery.
Yeah, and again, I think it's part of the demeanor. Like, I think Ime Udoka wants to try to bring that out of him, and there's going to be games where, like, okay, I'm trying to please my coach. I'm going to do this all, you know, try to be the dude, and then it's not successful because I think he's uncomfortable with it. Texture, it's all about understanding the flow of the game. Jalen needs to know when the team needs him to take the big shot. And then the right shot, I think, is also part of that. He probably meant that, the Texture did. Stop painting his nails as a start. I couldn't care less.
I could care less. If he makes buckets and does and plays the right way, I don't care about his nails.
Yeah, I don't care. It's kind of the trend. I'm not young and hip. I'm not going to comment about the young and hip. Well, I will, but I wouldn't. I'd be an idiot talking about it. Texture, Rockets miss Jabari. He's still got big upside. I like Jabari. I think Jabari's got a unique skill set. I think they're missing him, too. Their defensive numbers have been down since he's been gone. Their rebounding numbers have been down since he's gone, which is a little odd because he's not a great rebounder. But I do think that they're missing Jabari. But I think that they're missing Fred VanVleet more, actually.
I was just going to say, of the two, I think Fred is the one they're missing the most. But definitely when you throw a starting lineup out there that was under six, all of the guys were under 6'8" over the course of this road trip, then I definitely think, yeah, you need some more frontline players on this team. They're going to try with Zeller. I don't expect much. So
I can't imagine him jumping Jock, though, right? Like, Jock actually looked pretty good last night.
He played last night. So, I mean, yeah, for now, I mean,
I don't think that Zeller's a better player than Jock.
I mean, maybe at this point in Zeller's career because he's been around for a while. But I just think that it adds more to the fact that that's why you miss Jabari and or you need more help in the front court, because we knew going into the season they weren't very deep in the front.
There's a 6'10", 240 guy on the buyout market that they could
Here we go. But evidently he's turned a blind eye to Houston.
When did that come out? I saw somebody report today he's expected to meet with the Rockets today.
Two different reports as I was leaving the house to come here were saying that he was focused on the Cavs and the Clippers.
Well, doesn't he have a home in L.A. too?
Like, I think so. Yeah, I believe he does, yes.
Texture, I think Jalen was like Cam under Silas, and he's learning to play basketball now under Ime, so he walks the line in between. I think that's a fair point. I think that Jalen is learning how to play winning basketball, as is Cam. I just think their personalities are on polar opposites between Jalen and Cam Whitmore. Like, Cam Whitmore is like an alpha too much, overconfident too much. I think Jalen's trying to come out of his shell and become a little bit more alpha. 713-780-ESPN, when is Fred expected to return? I haven't heard anything of you.
I have not.
I've week to week.
No. Yeah, I don't know, because it was kind of mysterious when it popped up. And, yeah, I mean, the All-Star game is when? I mean, is he going to be out till the All-Star break? Because that would kind of suck, especially with them in a tailspin.
Yeah, not sure. Only Booker and Ant moved the needle as a trade target. Let's see what happens. I mean, things change, and things change fast in sports, so we'll see. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get your thoughts on the Rockets if you want. Also, Ari Alexander. He's reporting that the Astros upped their offer for Alex Bregman. I hate it. 713-780-3776. Busy show. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitter at ESPN975, Blankers at Pac-Man Joel, Brian at Sack by BMAC, I'm at Jeremy Branham. We are the Bees, ESPN975 and ESPN925.
ESPN975. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. Scrolling through the Twitch here, see if they have anything good to say. Not really.
Why would you subject yourself to that?
I kind of like a little give or take. I like throwing some jabs and punches. Key and Twitch says a good Colorado steak. I don't know. We'll see about that. Let's see. Anything else? Oh, the Twitchers are saying that Athletically Declined was saying that the Twitchers are icons, I guess, that they're legends. I told them that they must be academically inclined as well. They're just new guys trying to, you know, get curry favor with the Twitchers.
That's probably right. Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. Ari Alexander, Channel 2, right? Where's
yes.
Channel 2?
Mm-hmm.
Ari Alexander is reporting that the Astros upped their offer for Alex Bregman. I hate this, Blankers. I already feel like 6-156 is too much. I don't want to go more than 6-156. I'm not a huge fan of this report. Like, some Astro fans are, okay, there's still a chance. And I actually think that there is a chance that they can still sign Alex Bregman. I think I put it at, like, 15%. Because mm-hmm. I think there's probably 4 or 5 teams in the mix if you want to include a mystery team. The Astros are in the mix. Tigers are in the mix. Red Sox, Blue Jays, and if you want to throw another mystery team, well, then there's your fifth. So I think that they had like a 15% chance to sign him. But whenever I read Ari's tweet that they upped their offer, whenever I already dislike 6-156, I wasn't too pleased reading this.
Yeah, I think the big thing to me is I don't like it. Ari's sources have been really good in Major League Baseball. There's no reason to think that he's not accurate. And the bigger thing to me is, how do we know that anybody has even offered that or more yet, and now you're adding more to it, if that's true? Yeah, I don't like this at all either, because we talked about the fact that it's Bregman or bust, and it doesn't seem like if they don't get Bregman, they're going to spend the money, but yet they're upping the offer to Alex Bregman. I'm not a fan of that, because I would like to say that, hey, at a certain point, you know when to draw the line in the sand, pull the plug on the entire experience, say thanks but no thanks, and then still pivot and be able to do what you did when you got a third baseman and a first baseman, and still see if you can find a left-handed bat so that this team still improves without maybe spending that much money for those many years. So, yeah, I don't like it at all.
Like I gamble.
No. I mean, at $1.2 million, you can spend more than that, and you can find somebody that's a better, more consistent outfielder. I hope Gamble continues to play like he did while he was here. I was a fan of the way he played since he put a uniform on, but they need better than that.
They've upgraded the outfield.
At one position, on a cheap contract, okay.
No. Jose Altuve is not a cheap contract.
I'm not talking about Altuve. And if that's going to be your consistent left fielder, you know that I have concerns about that move defensively. I don't ever question his bat, but I question him playing outfield at like on a consistent basis all season already.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it's fair to question his defense. I question his defense at second. But he's going to be a poor defender wherever he plays. You don't think that the Astros would spend money, though, if it's not Bregman, though, right?
I think that I would like them to, because I think that if Verdugo's only $7 million, and that's just the name that I'm kind of most focused on, that it's not too much money, and yet I think that the return on that could be very, very good for this team. I would think that $7 million shouldn't be too much to spend on a prove it type deal. If he hasn't signed anywhere yet and he says he wants to prove he can still hit and still play, this would be a great opportunity for him, and that's not that much money.
That $7 million though becomes like $9 million, and it also costs you draft picks. It costs you compensation, because if you were to lose Fromber next offseason, now because you go over the luxury tax with Alex Verdugo, now you're getting a fourth-round draft pick instead of an end-of-the-first-round draft pick. So it's not just the $7 million for Verdugo. It'd be $7 million, but it could potentially be like $8.5 million, $9 million, and then you're also looking at the ramifications of being a back-to-back offender of going over the luxury tax. You're looking at the ramification of losing draft picks, the ramifications of signing a player that's compensation eligible next offseason as well. So it's not just the crossing the threshold. There's a lot of penalties if the Astros are a repeat offender. There's a lot of penalties if you're over the competitive balance tax anyway. So I don't think that they're going to sign another player unless it's Alex Bregman. I don't think they'll repurpose any of the money, not even like all of it. I don't think they'll repurpose any of the money. It's Alex Bregman or bust. And I think that's why the offer is still on the table, and probably why it's been upped a little bit, is because Jim Crane and Dana Brown know that. If we have one more swing at Alex Bregman, and if it's not Alex Bregman, then we're going to the season with what we got. I don't believe that they'll sign anybody else.
But if they're going to sign Bregman, then they're going to everything that you just said. If they sign Verdugo, is going to happen as well, right?
Yeah, but it's Bregman who's an Astro icon, and it's Alex Verdugo who was awful last year, who has zero ties with the city. I mean, they are not the same.
But at the same time, if it's the same consequence and you know you were willing to do it for Bregman, then I think that it's at least – and you want to be a team that with a window wide open to compete for more than just winning, getting a playoff spot or winning the division, then I would think that they would consider that. They could still, like we talked about yesterday, if they get closer to the deadline before the season's over, if they aren't in it, try and scale back to try and get under. But
yeah, but you're talking about making moves because you're in it, and then in the same breath talking about making moves whenever you're not in it.
Right. I'm saying if I'm not in it, then I can pull the plug. I can start selling off assets and getting rid of players if I want to get under before the end of the season or whenever the deadline is.
Yeah, the challenge for me there is you're saying make a winning move.
Right.
But
until you're not in it.
Before you even finish the season, it's like unless you're not in it, then you start selling pieces.
What's wrong with that?
Because it's the mindset. It's the mindset to me. You're not signing a player and going over the competitive balance tax, and then in the same breath, we might be out of it in June. They're not thinking.
I'm not
that
saying
way.
They might be, but as the season plays out, if you go,
that's exactly what you said.
No, I'm not. But Jeremy,
you said
understand
if
what
are.
I'm trying to say. Okay, just listen to the point instead of
I
being so
the
focused
point,
on trying to
clear.
Just
I heard
the
point
semantics of every word out of my mouth.
Well,
understand the
matter?
Point that I'm trying
shouldn't
to make is, which is if you go for it, let me finish. When you go for it, and you go for it, and you said you're going to set it up to go for it this season, you go for it until a certain point when if it's not going well, you can still get to the point where you need to be so that you're not over the tax for the second time.
Yeah, I understand that the first time you said it.
Well, then stop doing the semantics thing about you said that. Understand
what
I meant.
Conversation. I understood what you meant. You said, and I'll relay it to you so you know I understand what you meant. Sign a player with the idea to improve your team. And if you're not winning in July, you trade them. That's what you meant, right?
No, not that player. You do what you have to do to scale. Teams do it all the time.
You want the Astros to spend on Alex Verdugo, who had an 83 OPS plus last year, go over the competitive balance tax because you think it will help the Astros win. And then if they're out of the race in July, you're trading salary to get under the competitive balance tax. My point is, to your point, counterpoint, that if you're making that type of move for Alex Verdugo, you do not have the mindset that you're going to be trading pieces in July.
Well, then, but if he's willing to go over it for Bregman, if as long as they're competitive, I'm sure he'll be willing, because you don't even know what their mentality is towards Fromber after this year either. So, but at the same time, if they're willing to go over it for Bregman because they want that chance to win, and you're not going to sign Bregman, and you know that most people looking at that outfield knows it's less than that you're going to be. And if it works out and he's doing things that he did in Boston, not what he did in New York, and you're in it, then I would expect that Crane's okay riding with the ramifications.
Well, we do have a history of what Jim Crane does. Jim Crane will go over the competitive balance tax for a splash, for a big name. He doesn't do it for the Alex Verdugos of the world. That's why I'm having a tough time, having this apples-to-apples comparison between going over the competitive balance tax for Alex Bregman versus Alex Verdugo. One is a franchise icon that's arguably, not even arguably, that is your best third baseman in franchise history that a lot of the fan base wants back, that your best player in franchise history wants back, that does help your team, versus a guy who was really bad last year that might be able to pull from some of his Boston heydays, which weren't very good either. They were above average to average. There's a huge difference between Bregman and Verdugo.
Okay, and it's also not, I just said, that's the guy that I've been fixated on as a guy that's cheap. But there's plenty of different guys they could still switch gears to still make sure that they're not done just because they're not going to bring back Alex Bregman. And if it's a trade or if it's someone else there that I'm not thinking of, and there's other guys that you could bring in, if you are willing to go for it mode to keep going to pay Bregman 6 years at that kind of money, then I would think that he's still willing to do what's necessary if Dana and or their meetings, or they agree that the outfield is not good and they need another guy.
Yeah, I don't know if Alex Verdugo is better than anybody that they have in their outfield, though.
I think he is, but I also think, like I said, then find if there's someone else, then switch gears and find somebody else, because their outfield is awful.
But the free agency market has no one left. Verdugo is probably the best outfielder left.
I just said, I don't know if there's a trade to be made or other ways you can take on salary that you can get better than Alex Verdugo if we're thinking that Verdugo ain't that guy, and I don't know who else is left. But I would think that from a mentality, organizational mentality standpoint, if you're willing to go over with Bregman, and if you can find someone that's better than Alex Verdugo that you're willing, then you should be willing to go over for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to have a name there. If you're going to play that card, you probably should have a name of who you would want. But we've seen this play from Crane. Like, Crane did it for Hader. He wasn't going to do it for some no-name middle reliever. Maybe he got spooked by Graveman, but he went top of the market. Like, Abreu didn't put him over the luxury tax, but he went top of the market first baseman, probably overspent. There's been two times in Crane's career as an owner where he's went over the competitive balance tax. The first time was whenever they traded for Zach Greinke at the deadline, who was a massive name. And then whenever it was Josh Hader, he's not going over the competitive balance tax for mediocre guys at best. Like, it's just, he's just not. And he's not going to use the $26 million, which might be more now, that he's offering Alex Bregman per year to repurpose that and spend it elsewhere. I just don't see it. And then Verdugo, like, I think Verdugo and Gamble are pretty even off, like, offensively. Defensively, Verdugo might be a little bit better. But is he worth $7 million when you just sign Gamble, who's pretty much equivalent to him? Like, they still have hopes for Chaz. They could be wrong there. Jake Meyer's a really good defensive center fielder. And they're committed to playing Altuve in left. So, like, I don't know how Verdugo really upgrades you. And Crane has the history of not doing that sort of thing. And then I don't think that they want to be over the competitive balance tax unless it's for a splashy name like Bregman.
Okay. And I said, whether it's Verdugo or not, I think that they should have the mentality that whether it's Bregman or not, if you were willing to go over there and you want to keep telling people that the window's still open and you're trying to compete for a championship, that if Bregman is out of the cards, then you should be going after someone else. That whether it's, you know, an outfit, it should be, I think, a left-handed bat, an outfielder, but going after someone else that gives you a similar opportunity, because I don't believe in the abilities of that outfield, and I don't want to see that outfield be the starting outfield, even if Altuve is in left.
Yeah. I just don't know how Verdugo moves your needle so much. It just, it kind of baffles me.
Okay.
Okay. Text to the risk reward on Verdugo is not worth going over the quote. The risk reward for Bregman is another texter. Bad word. Branham is back. LOL. Back and better than ever. Another texter. The smart move for the Astros is to let Bregman walk. Take what you get this year, reset the tax, and go into the following year with the money coming off the books. I tend to agree with that. And like, if I were making, I wouldn't offer Bregman the money. Like, I'm not giving the Bregman the offer that he wants. And if Crane was like, well, we got to at least try, I'm stopping at 120 for four, which is why I hate the idea of them jumping up from the 156.6. But I like where that texter's mindset is at. Like, I think that your roster, even without Bregman, is good enough to be a contender in the American League West. I think they'll win the division, quite frankly. Once you make the playoffs in baseball, it's whichever team gets hot. Baseball playoffs are a crapshoot. So I do think that the Astros are a contender without Alex Bregman. So I would do what that texter is suggesting. I wouldn't sign Bregman. I would stay just under the competitive balance tax. If there's a splashy name that becomes available at the deadline, you're like, let's go for it, then you do that. But I'm actually comfortable going to the season with what you currently have.
Yeah, and I'm just not as comfortable as you are. I'm not, because there's just too many question marks. You know, is Chaz going to bounce back? Is Trammell or someone else going to step up? Or Gamble, is he possibly going to finally be the guy that they thought he was when he first entered the league? And on that contract, throw the money aside. I just hope that – but there's too much in terms of hope and question marks as opposed to what we've kind of been accustomed to when this team is playoff caliber, which is that you've got some pretty steady pieces in the outfield. And I'm not saying it has to be Kyle Tucker and big names, but it's just – I mean, I think I hope Chaz finds it, but from the Chaz of even 2 years ago. But to me, Chaz and Jake are both reserve outfielders. Chaz could be a starting outfielder if you had a better outfielder somewhere else. But the fact that you're starting two fourth outfielders, in my opinion, on a good team in the outfield is not exciting.
Texter, shut up and listen for once. I heard him loud and clear, for what it's worth. I knew exactly what he was saying. Another texture, it's okay for people to have different opinions on a situation. Yeah, of course. We're always going to talk about that. We're not scared of confrontation. A smart move is for Branham to shut up for 2 minutes and let his co-host speak. Noted. Another texture. where did it go? It's not our job to help Bregman and Boris save face. I hate it. See, I don't think... Yeah. I see, you mentioned earlier, too, that you think that the Astros could be bidding against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Like, we right. don't know. But my feeling is that they're not. I do think that Bregman has at least a offer and maybe offers that are more than what the Astros have offered. I think he has two offers. I would guess he has one from Detroit and one from Toronto that are greater than six for 156.
I think, and again, it's going to be where he wants to play too, and all these different factors that factor in. The Cubs evidently aren't willing to budge and go further than I think three or four, but maybe the AAV is higher per year so that they can say they're offering him more money, at least from a year-to-year basis. And it comes down to, you know, the Red Sox are supposedly out of it now. They're kind of trying to pursue Arenado or go in a different direction that maybe at Toronto, whether he wants to play there or not, they seem to want to spend. But, yeah, we don't know what we don't know. So, and Detroit, once they signed Flaherty, they weren't sure they were going to go to another big contract. Yeah, I don't know all the teams involved, and we'll never know probably. It just doesn't seem like any if he had an offer better than the Astros already, you would think that he'd already have signed it.
Well, he doesn't want to play there.
Well, then he's going to have to probably end up – he's either going to play where he doesn't want to play or he's going to have to take what the Astros are willing to pay, I guess.
Or he can wait until just before opening day trying to get a couple of teams that he does want to play for to give him as close to that offer that exists. Like if we – let's just throw out an arbitrary number. Let's say that the Blue Jays and the Tigers have offered 180 for six, which is $30 million a year. Like that's not terribly far off. And Bregman was making $30 million a year with the escalators this season. Mm-hmm. And we've also heard that he doesn't want to take a pay cut from $30 million a year. So if we assume that Toronto and Detroit have given him 180 for six, which I think is plausible. I think it's possible that they did, but he doesn't want to live in Detroit. He doesn't want to play in Toronto. So now he's holding the Astros and the Red Sox maybe competing against each other, maybe bidding against each other, but he's holding those two offers of saying, look, this is what I got. You need to get into this ballpark for me to sign with you. And then whenever Ari Alexander tweets and reports that the Astros have improved their offer, I think that's the Astros trying to get closer to the 186 that Bregman could potentially have from Detroit and Toronto.
I think that, and then the other curious point of all of that is if the Astros get up to the same level as a team or two teams have offered him, is he expecting they have to go over that?
Maybe
or,
not.
Yeah, or does he just, do they just have to get there? And then at a certain point, how far are you willing to go and before we get back to the initial conversations we had when he hit the market, which is those last couple of years, as the price tag keeps going up, the return on investment's going down more and more, I think. And that how big of a risk is that for the franchise if you're willing to do that?
Massive. I wouldn't have paid him a dollar over a dollar. I wouldn't have paid him a dollar over 120 for four. So, like, I don't already like the 156 for six. So, improving that, I don't like at all. But my total guess of this is that Bregman has at least one offer, maybe two, from Toronto, Detroit, but he doesn't want to play there. That is greater than the Astros offer. Because, like, this, it all adds up, really. Like, we knew that the Astros offered 156.6 at the start of the year, according to reports, and there's always possibility reports are incorrect. But 156 for six was the early number, right? Astros yes. operate, like, they're mm-hmm. not going to sign Bregman. You've had Dana Brown, who's always kind of loose-lipped, kind of like, well, there's a chance. Joe Espada, there's always a chance. Dana Brown, oh, we're not talking to Boris. Oh, but they've improved their offer. Like, this feels like posturing to me. This feels like negotiating to me. So I think that there's a bigger offer, or Boris could be bluffing. That's always a possibility, but I do think that there is some demand for Bregman. So I think that Bregman is using that number, 180 for six, against the Astros and maybe even the Red Sox, saying, you guys need to get closer to this number for me to entertain your offer. And I think that with the Astros upping their offer, that is their effort and attempt to try to do that. And like we've talked about a lot, like what is the deadline that Bregman will impose on himself to sign? It might not be for until a week before opening day. So there's really no hurry from the Bregman-Boris camp. If they're trying to get the Astros and the Red Sox to get closer to 180 over six, what is their hurry?
Yeah, I think it's more so, too, from an Astros standpoint. At a certain point, when do we just decide once and for all whether we look bad in the deal or not, just move on? Because I don't think that they can afford to wait like Bregman can.
Why not? Because if you're not signing anybody else but Bregman, if it's Bregman or bust, Bregman and nobody else, I know that's not what you want, mm-hmm. but it's what I predict is going to happen. Why pull your offer from the table? If you know it's either Bregman or nothing, why not just leave the offer pending?
Because at a certain point, just like he did with Paredes and getting Paredes and Walker, at a certain point, you got to do what's best for you for the upcoming season and beyond.
Well, signing Bregman would be right.
But at the same time, look, yeah, they have different motives than you do. And at a certain point, you realize, look, if this goes any higher than this, then it's just ludicrous. We're not going to compete with that anymore anyway.
That's different than a pending offer. Like, that's improving your offer. I would leave the pending offer on the table until Bregman signs. I would leave it dangling out there because, again, they're not repurposing that money. They're not using $26, $28, $30 million, whatever they're offering to Bregman, to anybody else. It's allocated for Bregman. If Bregman says no, Jim Crane's going to say, well, we're going to stay under the competitive balance tax. Like, so why? What's the harm of leaving the offer on the table? He signs it?
You think that that's the case? I hope that that's not the case. But
I do.
I would like to think that that cooler heads prevail and go, look, at a certain point, we're not going to spend 33 or 30, you know, more money per year. And maybe, even if it's just 6 years, that's way too much.
Yeah.
And we just need to turn the page and move on, whether we get somebody else or not.
Well, if we're operating that they don't get anybody else and you just cap out your offer, why pull it, though? Like, let's just assume the 156 for six is the offer. They said they improved it, but we haven't heard any sort of, like, reports on the numbers. So let's say 156 over six. If the Astros are operating that it's Alex Bregman or nobody else, why would you pull the offer?
If you feel like he's not going to budge and he's going to try and get even more out of you, and you're like, okay, I'm already
gone. Well, you're not improving it. You're not improving the offer, though. Like, you're saying, this is it. It's take it or leave it. 156 for six, you have until opening day to accept, or we're going to pull it at that point. There's no harm of pulling the offer.
Yeah, then they can leave it on the table all they want. I already think that it's a bad deal. If they put more money in it to make it even worse, then I'm at a point where it's just more frustration than it is that I think it's going to be good for the team. And we've seen what bad deals do for this team when they have to just basically make it money you got to eat. And I'm afraid the back end of that deal is going to be exactly what they're going to have to do. And I think it's bad for them to keep, up in the ante and negotiating.
Well, I don't want him to up it. Like, I think those are two separate points, and I agree with you. Like, I think 6 for $156 is too much. I don't think they should continue to up it. But if they feel like this number is this number, and we're only going to give it to you, I don't see the reward of pulling the offer because they think that Bregman signs it, it makes them better. So,
well, in a way, and again, Jeremy, it just hypothetically, but if I say the other answer to that would be, well, then you actually play the ultimate game of chicken. If you don't believe that he actually has these other offers, if you don't believe that either he doesn't want to go there or that any team is willing to pay the kind of ransom or the kind of salary that you're asking the Astros to pay, then pull it off the table and say, hey, you know what? Either give him an ultimatum or just pull it off the table and see if they don't come knocking on your door going, hey, would you put that back on the table?
I think you just leave the current offer on the table. And if he signs somewhere else, he signs somewhere else. And if he comes back to you a week before the season, he's like, hey, I'm ready to sign it. You're like, okay, great. Get ready to play third and bat second. And we'll figure out the rest. But I wouldn't up it. I don't like the – and I already think it's too high. I'm with you.
It already is.
And I wouldn't up it. But I wouldn't take it off the table either. Like, if I'm them and they're like, yeah, 6 for $156 is doable, or 6 for $160 is doable, we think it helps our team. Okay, well, then leave it at that. Leave it on the table. Easy bake oven it. And then he'll give you an answer eventually. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Super Bowl's on Sunday. You might not know that. What is your favorite Super Bowl storyline? Well, Beasy Money, some of this as well. Not a whole lot of Beasy Money, but we'll play the the spread last I looked was even. But we'll lay down a little bit of money on that. Maybe the total, maybe some prop bets. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, I want to tell you about Allstate Siding and Windows. They're the best in the business. If you're looking to do something to upgrade your house, I'm here to tell you about Allstate Siding and Windows. They are the best in the business because they've been in business for almost 50 years. And what they do is they make sure that your house not only looks better, but it also is going to do the exact things that you want your house to do. It's going to protect you from the elements like hurricane season here in Houston, as well as excessive heat and the occasional really cold nights that you deal with. And on top of all that, the windows are going to be strong enough, the siding durable enough to take whatever's flying around in the wind when hurricane season hits. And from the bigger standpoint of getting your energy bills to go down, that's the immediate impact that whatever they do is going to have on you and your family. Because my wife and I, when we bought our house a little over a year ago, we decided to invest in Allstate windows. And boy, are we glad we did, because immediately the curb appeal was upgraded. But the most important thing was it really kept the elements out and the air conditioning or the heating in the house over the last year. Energy bills went down about 30% overall, but some months it was higher than that, and we could not have been happier. And the process is all painless, because at Allstate Siding and Windows, they do free estimates where they come in and they tell you exactly what they could do to help you. All you got to do is call them, 832-204-1936, 832-204-1936. They'll come out to your house and tell you all the different products that they offer based on the architecture of your house and the year it was built, the ones that will work best for your structure, and then walk you through all of their discounts and specials, like 30% off all the windows, $2,500 off a complete siding job, discounts for military personnel and first responders. All listening to us, talking to them, gets you in a better spot, because when you mention us, they're going to take care of you even more, because they love us and they love you being listeners to our shows. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by, but see what they can do for you too. Check out all the products and services at AllstateSidingAndWindows.com and call them at 832-204-1936.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations, because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.